Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board previously met in closed session, and several items were discussed. Public employee appointment, the superintendent. Review and approval of the employment contract for Dr. Ed Valentine. And as an adjunct item to that, conference with labor negotiators, district designated representatives, board president and clerk, unrepresented employees, superintendent. Discuss those items and direction was given to staff. We discussed public employee appointment, interim assistant superintendent, reviewed the employment contract for Dr. William Brand as assistant superintendent for educational services. Personnel status and negotiations with the California School Employees Association, confidential employees, service employees international union, and direction was given to staff. We conferred regarding with labor negotiators, district designated representatives, Rick Robinette and Dr. Valentine, and unrepresented employees, hourly employees, and direction was given to staff. We discussed two items, one of pending litigation, one of anticipated litigation, and again, direction was given to staff. So we are now in open session. Do we have consensus on the order of business? Okay. Approval of the minutes.
Say something about that.
Sure. Mrs. Dickinson.
Can I just make a comment first? Whoever writes these up does such a great job of summarizing what everyone says, and we don't need to put everything in. But I thought at one point I wanted to add to the summary of the board response to the charter school was that while we like innovation, and I think there's room for innovation in our schools, an improvement. This seemed more like a marketing and manufacturing project, like the innovation occurred in San Diego and then just copying it and replicating it here was not as innovative. So it would be neat if we could have project-based learning and internships out in the community incorporated into what we're doing, see what we're doing and how can we bring those ideas in. I think that would be a true innovation, which would be helpful. So I just kind of wanted to add that.
Would you like to second the motion?
I don't think that changes the minutes.
Okay.
I had moved.
I was second it.
Those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay, passes unanimously.
Madam Chair, I ask him where the minutes for the 15th were, and she said that she's working on them. We'll have them by the next board meeting.
Thank you. Okay, we have two presentations tonight. The first, pardon me, is the Teach Foundation Winter Grant Awards for 2005.
It's on. It's always strange presenting here because you guys are here, but Teach's community is here, and our teachers are out here. So I have to do this. I have to thank all of you for coming tonight. We have a number of teachers who are giving up their evenings tonight to come and receive their awards, and we have many people who support the Teach Foundation who are also here. Before I start, it's a dress.
You need me to model for you.
We're gone. Our children, our children's children, and all the children of this school district will have the opportunity to make use of that money. So, tonight we honor those teachers who are going to take some pieces of that money into the community this spring with their students. What I'm going to do is read the list. I've given everyone a press release which does list all of the winners for this winter cycle. Instead of having everyone get up, I will just ask them to stand as I've read your names so that the board can recognize you. And afterwards, I will be handing out to each of the teachers their contract, what they've said they will do, and what Teach will hold them to do, and also a pin, a cup, and a T-shirt, because we want everyone to spread the word into our community that Teach is not a private little group doing something. Teach is our school district's endowment. We are not a bunch of other people doing something. We are all of us doing something. And if you ever want to see that in action, come to or watch our annual telethon when you see hundreds of our local children performing. Let's start on our winners. The first person I'd like to recognize is Daniel Freeman at Morro Bay High School, who's receiving $750 to take his 11th and 12th grade students to attend the UCLA Young Writers Conference. Our second winner is at San Luis Obispo High School, Jody Evans. Jody's very active with the Teach Foundation. She has lots of things she wants funded, and she's constantly applying, and we love to see that. Jody is getting $750 for a grant which is generally titled Livestock Restraint. Jody isn't able to be here tonight, but Will Jones will be taking her stuff back to her. Next person is Bryn Bellier at Los Osos Middle School and Morro Bay High School. What he is building with his $750 is... Bryn is building a jazz listening library because he knows our students need to hear the variety of jazz music in order for them to then learn how to play it. At Laguna Middle School, Eva DeSanto is getting $250 for a year-long social studies book project. She knows that kids internalize social studies more when they actually have to create their own social studies book. It's a very novel project. Eva can't be here tonight, but Steve Anderson is taking her material back. The next grant is Morro Bay High School, San Luis Obispo High School Combined Choirs, $1,000 for Gary Lamprecht's Combined Concert Choir Visit to St. Luke's in Harlem. It is our pleasure to contribute to Gary's excellent work on behalf of both of our high schools in creating a legacy of musical learning for our students. And Gary has also promised to wear his Teach T-shirt on location in New York and take pictures of himself, so we will be able to know that that money was spent well. Next grant at Bishop's Peak Elementary and Laguna Middle School. We have $748 will go for Monica Stang. Hello, Monica. Monica will be providing a special education communication and reading skills program, and we were underwriting some of the materials for that. At Hawthorne Elementary, we have $506 for Jamie Andre and Jennifer Kaufman's Read Naturally books. One of the things that Teach Foundation tries to do, we know there are a lot of reading and book requests across the district, but when we have one and we feel we can make a difference over time, as with this one, we fund it more than one cycle until the teacher has the materials they need to really make a difference. Next grant is for Elaine Hill's Yoga Kit for PE. And her work benefits Bishop's Peak and Teach Elementary. Mike Yalo, Did I pronounce that correctly? Mike.
Oh, yeah.
Yay. Mike has created the most incredible environment over at San Luis Obispo High School. We tend to have more applicants during our fall, so we like to save a little bit more for that period of time. I encourage you to keep on applying. I encourage the board members to keep telling the principals and the teachers to apply, because the more applicants we have, the more we can go to the community and say, this is what our teachers need. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Millar.
Thank you very much. I wanted to ask what grant cycle. I wanted you to come up and say what you forgot to say and then tell me what grant cycle we're in.
This is a whole new thing. We just did this with the Teach Telethon. In order to entice teachers to take their precious Saturday away to go to the Teach Telethon, we offered this year 2 Teach grants of $500 each. And every teacher that came to the telethon was put into a little hat, and we pulled 2 names out of the hat. I'd like to tell you who the winners of those 2 $500 grants are. First one, Guy Crabb, third grade teacher at Del Mar. Guy has brought his students to the telethon every single year we've had the telethon. So we're very excited to be able to give him a little more money, and he's applied a lot of times too. So he's making use of the Teach Foundation. The next teacher is Elena Smith at Morro Bay High School. She's actually the school counselor, but her dance team comes every year, and she will be using the money to support the dance team that she directs and leads over at Morro Bay High School. So we're very excited because they also come and perform every year, and it's fun to see the kids get to demonstrate what they've learned.
That's so awesome.
And I was just wondering, how many grant cycles have we been through so far?
Oh, my gosh. 5? Well, okay. It's been 5 years, but we only started in the spring of this year. So what does that come to, about 8? 9, I think. So we're getting up there. This was a nice year for funds, investments. So we had a little more to spend. But every time we get some more funding coming in, it goes to good use. We really encourage you, if somebody's looking for a place to park some money that's going to be useful to our kids, turn them to the Teach Foundation, because we can keep our money local and we can really do some good. Thank you.
And I just want to say that the telethon was a lot of fun. Guy Crabb's third graders did steal the show, though, with their musical number. And I just want to make sure everybody notices, and I'm sure the board members have, the names that show up. I had a student in Mike's class, too. And the names that show up on these grant requests are some of our finest, brightest, best teachers, and we shouldn't miss that, and we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Paula. Okay, next we have a presentation, Morro Bay High School WASC Self-Study Accreditation Report. Would that be Mr. Zotovich?
Pete Zotovich, Principal of Morro Bay High School. It is our pleasure this evening to present to the Board of Education our WASC Self-Study book. We've spent now about 15 months preparing this for our WASC team that will be coming this next weekend. Sunday. They will spend Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, Wednesday with us. We will know about 6 weeks after that what our term of accreditation will be. At this time, I'd like to introduce our English department chair, Mrs. Linda Balfour, who was our self-study coordinator on campus, and she will just speak to the book for you just for a moment. Linda?
Pete wanted me to come along tonight and just kind of walk you through the book quickly. Please. The book has basically 5 chapters, as WASC requires of us. The first chapter is a school and community profile. And so there you'll have a discussion of all of our data gathering and such. The second chapter is the expected school-wide learning results, and you'll see their tab there for you for easy reference. Then the third chapter is our progress report, wherein we're asked to report on our previous WASC findings and how have we dealt with them in the past 6 years. Chapter 4, then, is our self-study findings. And that's we have six focus groups that all of our staff members participate in, and they have a series of rather in-depth questions about various aspects of our program that we spent studying and then writing our reports. The fifth chapter is our action plans, and we ended up with five action plans for the next 6 years. We're very, very proud of the work that we've put together in this report.
We really, really appreciate it, so thank you. And we'll be more than happy in a few weeks or whenever, when you give us the opportunity, you'd like us to come back and speak to the report.
Okay. Ms. Trunger.
And I just think we should acknowledge the very, very hard work that Mr. Zotovich and Mrs. Balfour and the staff at Morro Bay High School put into this. I was an observer of this. And nights, I think you guys spent days and nights coming up with this. I think at one point you said you hadn't seen your wife for a couple of weeks, maybe. But you hadn't seen your own bed, you know. So it's a big product. It's a lot of work, and I think you guys need to be acknowledged, and all of Morro Bay High School needs to be acknowledged for this work. And then also, while we're at it, I'd like to acknowledge Morro Bay High School for becoming on the short list for California Distinguished Schools. And then one final kudo to the high school was in your monthly newsletter, Pete, where you said that I think Morro Bay High School was the only high school in Santa Barbara and San Luis Obispo counties getting the 800, which is really something to be congratulated for.
Thank you.
Dr. Valentine.
Just wanted to add, I think one of the really remarkable accomplishments of Morro Bay High School has been its ability to pull together and collaborate as a team on this. Linda acknowledged that in her presentation, and Pete has done it many, many times. But I think the kinds of honors and recognitions that Morro Bay has earned and will continue to earn, I know in the near future, is a product of that whole school, whole team cooperation piece, and it's something to commend them for.
Thank you. Mrs. Botwin.
Just wanted to thank you, Linda. I can't see you.
Okay.
I want to thank you for one of the briefest presentations and the most efficient. When we looked at this book, I'm telling you, some of us had goosebumps because it's bigger than our own book that we spent the weekend on. The other thing is, the last time you got the full 6 years. Is that correct? How about the time before that?
6 years.
So we've got a reputation of getting full term. Okay, good luck. That's great. Thank you.
Mrs. Dickinson.
Roy Grandy High School just went through this. We just got an email from our principal that we got 6 years. But it's a big process. And I thought it was not that bad in some ways because the teachers have to communicate and get together so much. And you tend to be a little isolated once in a while. But going through WASC, you know, you really bond with your committees. And It's not a bad process, even though it's so, you know, overwhelming. So congratulations, though.
Thank
I'm
you.
Sure you'll get 6 years, too.
It's been a great few years for us because between our school improvement plan really focusing us and tying it together with our WASC report and now with the Distinguished School Recognition, it's been just a wonderful time. Thank you all.
Good.
Thank you. And I would just like to make one sort of personal comment. I mean, this is a fabulous volume of work, and I'll take some time and look through it. It's not something that I can just peruse here tonight. And I know that there are many people to be credited for it, but I would like to take this opportunity to say that I believe Linda Balfour may be in her last year of service with us, and that she is She is a fabulous teacher and a wonderful person, and I think that it's really indicative of the kind of person that you are, that in your last year when you could just sort of be coasting, quietly away that you would put so much effort into this. It speaks to your to the fact that you are really a quality human being. And thank you for your service to the district. Now, if I can move the big book, we will move on to reports by school staff and student representatives to the board. Oh, I beg your pardon. I have skipped right over public comment. I have not received any requests or for to address the board. Yes, we are.
Yes, I'm not a member of the public.
But that's for, to item four.
It's a great ginger snaps over there, folks.
Mr. Jones, you wanted to speak to item four?
I'm sorry, he requested item four. Sorry,
it's totally up to you. Do you want to wait for item four?
I'm not the usual.
Okay. Is there any member of the public here who has not submitted a request?
Opposed, and only three of the 14 are of the affordable variety and would be made available first to qualified district employees before being made to the general public if there were no takers from the school district. And that the housing units in the Avila project are not condominiums. The Johnson Avenue property, which was mentioned in the article, the headline might have misled you a little bit because we're in the earliest stages of investigation, and I believe Jeff reported it that way in his article. And we don't know that there's any project there at this point. We're doing a due diligence study right now to provide you with the information the board needs to take a look at it and see if you want to explore moving in some other direction with that piece of property. And that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Other staff reports? Okay, we have our student representatives. I have my poor vision. Shiny, would you like to begin?
Hi, I'm
Shaney.
Shaney.
Beg your
yeah.
pardon.
That's okay. I'm Shaney Butcher from San Luis Obispo. Just a quick update. All of our winter sports are done, and most of our sports went to CIF. Girls basketball and girls soccer went to the second round, so that was exciting. And spring sports have begun. This Friday is the spring dance, and it's a 70s theme, so that should be really fun. This weekend, our band will be performing in the Western Band Association Festival. on the 6th, the FFA will be having a pancake breakfast fundraiser in the cafeteria. Also, next week, our second trimester finals will be in. From the 10th to the 11th, our choir will be performing in the American Choral Directors Association's Spring Choral Festival. On the 12th will be the SATs and the SAT2s at Cuesta, which I will also be taking. On the 15th through the 16th, our 10th graders will be taking the high school exit exam. On the 18th, FFA will be in King City for the regional finals, and our choir will be leaving for New York City to perform at Carnegie Hall. On the 19th, our band will be having a play-a-thon at the Mission Plaza from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. On the 22nd, there will be an FFA chapter meeting at 8 o'clock at our high school, and spring recess will start the 25th. So that's what's going on at Slo High.
Thank you very much. Is it Corey? I'm sorry, my eyes are so poor.
Hi, I'm Corey Rotasio, and I'm here from Pacific Beach. For the last 2 months, our school has been working on our mock trial, and Walt Millar was one of our attorney coaches, and if he wasn't there, we probably would have been pretty lost. But we didn't get very far, but we did, when we put on our defense. Our defendant was acquitted of all three charges. Today, the drama class went to the PCPA Theater to see the As You Like It play, and from what I heard from everybody else, everybody liked it a lot, and it was a very good show. I went as well. Our art class and our mock trial, three representatives from each class went to the Teach Telethon and showed some pictures of mock trial and showed some art pictures. And on the 16th of last month, everybody turned, all of our seniors from our school turned in scholarship applications, and hopefully a lot of us will get the scholarships. And that's pretty much all that's going on at Pacific Beach.
Hi, my name is Nisa Ann Curvis. I am taking the place of Lindsay Ayotte, who is our old school board representative. We have a fundraiser, Pennies for Patients, that started February 25th and will go on through March 24th, and it is to benefit the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And Mock Rock auditions are today, tomorrow, and Thursday, and the actual Mock Rock will be happening on April 15th. As was said earlier, WASC is visiting our school from Sunday, March 6th to Wednesday, March 9th, and we are looking forward to their visit. Winter sports banquet is Monday the 7th. That will be the wrap-up of all the winter sports. It's at 6 o'clock. And then spring sports will start. It has started, and our assembly will be this Friday, March 4th. It is a senior theme. We're going to have a video of seniors and a slideshow from when the seniors were babies. And choir is leaving for New York.
That you have homework and other engagements, so you may also feel free to leave at any time. And thank you for joining us.
Did you guys check out the cookies? Pretty good.
Mr. Miller, status of the state budget?
Thank you, Madam President. There's not a whole lot new. We continue in the same vein where Governor Schwarzenegger is attempting to defend his programs. He has switched tactics lately. He's contriving compromises that might generate some support from bipartisan members of both parties. But there is very, very strong resistance to his educational platforms, the things that we would be interested in. The things that would cause us the most damage would be the mid-year budget adjustments, where he is going to take a snapshot twice during the fiscal year, and if the revenues are not adequate to pay for the expenditures, then he will cut each and every expenditure across the board, in essence generating mid-year cuts for us because our funding would be reduced, and that would happen twice during the year. Those are the types of actions which are almost impossible for us to react to unless we have substantial reserves to be able to bridge through the 1 year, because once we do our budget and start spending our money, to just call for a halt mid-year and say, oh, no, you're gonna suffer a reduction of X number of dollars, is not possible within the educational system. So that's one thing that we're watching very closely. And then the other aspects of his program would be very much of a concern to the whole education community of California, although not so much for our particular district. But we'll see more and more of this meeting in the middle of the road kind of behaviors as his program goes forward. But at this time, there's nothing, any consequence to report yet.
Thank you very much. The next item is a resolution, the Week of the School Administrator, presented by Mr. Robinette.
Thank you. The California State Legislature has designated next week, the week of March 7th, as the Week of the School Administrator. We know that great schools are led by great administrators, who in turn are given their support by a great team of directors and superintendents and assistant superintendents. So we ask that the board adopt this resolution to acknowledge and honor our administrative team.
Thank you. Mr. Millar.
I'll move the resolution, and I'd like to ask Mr. Robinette a question.
I second the resolution. I'll ask your question.
Have we notified SLO PD of the parties and celebrations that could break out during the week of the administrator? So,
I have not, but I will take note of that, Mr. Millar.
I want to be there.
Okay. So let's see, this was moved by Mr. Millar, seconded by Mrs. Botwin. It's a roll call.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Botwin?
Aye.
Mrs. Dickinson?
Aye.
Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Mr. Marinello?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Oh, the school administrator. Better withdraw.
Abstain from voting.
Okay, discussion items. Number four, evaluation report for Pacheco Elementary School as a two-way foreign language alternative school, presented by Jim Miller.
It's good they have the boom tonight to get up here. I also have Dina Naus, our Title VII resource teacher, with me this evening. And I'd like to thank the board once again for the opportunity to speak to our annual report. I think at the very least, this report is quite possibly the strongest affirmation of the outstanding work that the Pacheco staff does year after year. And I want to take the opportunity to publicly acknowledge that because they are just an outstanding group. The certificated and the classified folks, you know, just work their tails off, and you don't get results like that without that level of effort. The results themselves are similar to what we have seen in years past. They demonstrate that our students are making excellent progress toward our programmatic goals. The board, you've all received ahead of time a copy of the report. I think we broke the 40-page barrier for the first time this year.
Yep.
It's a very complex presentation of data. In essence, you know, we don't have a formal presentation like we have had in years past, but Dina and I would be happy to answer any specific questions that you have as far as what's contained in the report.
Mr. Unger.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if I asked this question last year, but I'd like to, if I did, I'd like to have a review of it anyway on page 16. When we talk about EL students, what occurs to me is that those students who we redesignate as...
Let's go to page 21, because this is a new part of the report where Dr. Lindholm has figured out a way to report progress on the standards test, and I think it'll make part of a point, and maybe a partial explanation. Part of the issue with looking at the progress and separating out the progress of EL students and those that have been RFEPed is a criteria that one uses to do that redesignation. When we first got the report and in studying this, for example, and we try and focus, or for the sake of the discussion, let's just look at sixth grade, which is the exit product, okay? If you look at the sixth grade results, and remember these are EL students who have not been redesignated, right? There are a percentage in the district and a percentage in the state that scored, well, in the state, there was 1% of these students that scored advanced on the STAR test. And there were 5% of these students that scored at the proficient level. As rigorous as the STAR test is, one of two things happened there. Either those students should have been redesignated, or they, you know, made a lot of progress right at that point in time. You know? If you go to page 22, and you look at the same thing with FEP students, and again you can compare Pacheco School to the state because that's the way the state disaggregates the data. You can see that you have in the state 2% of FEP students that are rated at far below basic, 9% are below basic. In my opinion, those students should not have been redesignated if they only performed that well on the test. Probably the best measure of overall Pacheco students, Spanish-speaking EL and FEP students would be those combined, which is in the chart at the bottom of the page. And I think you have to look at the fifth grade and the sixth grade results. And again, we can't compare that to the state because the state doesn't give us a combined figure of EL and FEP students together, but we can do it versus progress of students in the district. And you can see there that there's a high level of performance. We still have you know, 11% of our students that are far below basic. I don't know if part of that explanation could be kids. I would guess that it's kids that are latecomers, that have not been in the program, that have been fairly recent immigrants of 2, 3, 4 years and haven't had the full 7 years of the program. There could be issues there of students that could be special education, learning handicapped students, and so on. You know, that's a partial explanation to your question. I think the best answer I can give you is that relative to the progress that we see EL students make in the district and the state against such rigorous standards, which are the highest of all 50 states, that our students perform really well. One other thing, I'm sorry, but I'll add one other thing. In regard to the students that you're talking about and part of our program improvement status, in the last month or so, we have just started a new component of our program which focuses on English language development for the kids you're talking about that is after school. We've been able to work out transportation. So 2 days a week, we have students who stay after till 4 o'clock. They're bused to the coast 2 days a week and around town 2 days a week, which is quite a feat in itself given the area that we cover. We hope that's, you know, that's our next step in trying to remedy the issue that you bring up.
Thank you, because those are the students that we see great progress in your school. Your school is obviously a model school and something our community is very, very proud of. There is that subgroup of students that I want to make sure that we're targeting as well as everybody else, but students who seem not to be achieving as well as they could be achieving, or as I think you've recognized, who maybe need some extra help, and I'm glad to see that the school has recognized that and is doing some things to help push those kids on forward. You know, I think we're going to need to look also at continuing that push when they get to middle school and probably high school as well, because we want to make sure that those kids are able to pass the California exit exam and get their high school diplomas. So,
thank you.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, I just wanted to share that when we were talking about the Pacheco program earlier in the year, we noted that for the California Content Standards test, that in order to score proficient in English language arts, in the cut point was the point at which 30% of the students in the state of California in 2000, the top 30% of scores defined the cut point for proficient on the California Content Standard test. What we noted when we were talking about Pacheco, and I think it's interesting and relates to the question too, is that when we look at the exiting students from Pacheco and look only at those
state FEP, but when you combine both, which I think really is the more meaningful statistic, we can only compare against the district.
Okay, and thank you. That clarifies that. I think I have this observation, the same observation every year. You know, a year apart is impossible for me to try to remember. But in looking at the data and the summary, it seems that the EL students ultimately perform about the same as the state EL students in the Spanish language arts assessments and mathematics assessment. Is that, am I reading this correctly?
At or above. Yeah.
At or above. And I think every year it's kind of, what I've always sort of wondered about is, I think it's easier to see a overall academic performance benefit for Spanish language learners as they go through the Pacheco program, just by virtue of the process of dual immersion. I'm not so sure that we see the same thing with the Spanish English language learners as they go through it. And am I missing something in here, or is it just not as definitive from the data?
Well, again, I think the data shows that our kids, our Spanish-speaking kids, outperform those across the state. You know, the results are still not what we'd like to see. They're obviously not similar to the results that English speakers achieve on the English-speaking test, whether it's the STAR test or the SAT-9 or whatever. The other thing that's important to bear in mind is that with the achievement level in English that our Spanish-speaking kids have, in addition, they are also going to be literate in their primary language, of which the students you're comparing them to in the state are not. They will have not achieved literacy in Spanish, the ability to read or write it. Eventually, some of them will probably, you know, lose the ability to speak it and comprehend it well.
Thank you.
I hope that answers your question.
Mrs. Botwin.
I didn't find it in here, but it may be in here. Is there any point during the evaluation where you showed the number of students that enter in kindergarten and go through the entire program?
Yes. We just have to find where it would be. It would be in some of the charts. These would be the kids that we track from kindergarten through sixth grade.
Right.
Let me see what I can find here.
Okay, Adrian's ahead of you.
You can figure in any given year that we start in kindergarten with 80 students, and it's pretty close to 40 English speakers and 40 Spanish speakers.
I'm sorry, say that again.
You can figure in any given year that we start in kindergarten with 80 students. It would be approximately 40 English speakers and 40 Spanish speakers. I'm referencing, just at random here, Table 5 on page 18. It is showing that as far as our English proficient students in sixth grade, we had 23 students by the end of sixth grade. So we went down from 40 to 23 students over the 7 years as far as the English speaking students. Again, looking at that same table with EL and FEP combined, I'm seeing in sixth grade the number is 27. So we went down from 40 to 27 students over the 7 years.
Thank you. I did not see this. It gives us an idea. So approximately 40 to 50% of the kids that begin the program finish the program, at least from those two groups.
Let's see. This would demonstrate 50 out of 80. Can't do the math in my head. It's more than 50%.
Okay.
60% maybe.
Yeah. Then
62.5. Thank you, Mr. Burns.
When 80 start in kindergarten, what happens if it drops the next year? Can you then take additional kids coming in for first grade?
We do that, right.
Okay. All right, that was... And then second grade and third grade?
Right. What happens is that the every year we have a lottery for the English side of the equation for the 40 spots. So the board had already granted priority to siblings that are already in the program.
Right.
Those kids go in first. Then we have a lottery. Let's say we have 25 additional English-speaking spots, and we have 35 people that want to enter the program. In the lottery, the first 25 students picked are in. Number 26 is number 1 on the waiting list. Number 27 is number 2 on the waiting list. That list for English speakers stays intact through the end of first grade, and we backfill as students leave off that list. If somebody new comes in after that original kindergarten registration and wants to come in either at kindergarten or first grade, they go to the end of that list. Spanish speakers, on the other hand, come in with siblings and then first come, first served through the Welcome Center as they're tested and so forth to determine their level of English and Spanish. And the same thing, we maintain a list, a waiting list, based on if somebody comes in after the kindergarten registration, kindergarten, first grade, second grade. We really discourage English-speaking parents to put their kids in the program after the end of first grade because the gap is just too large unless they have any kind of a Spanish background.
And 63 scored at that level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got 5th and 6th, just a 3% difference, and then we go to Spanish speakers demonstrated that 67% of students in grade 4 were rated as proficient, and in 5th grade, 67% were proficient. And in 6th grade, big jump, okay, a big jump there, 86%. Why are those so close, those percentages? 67% in Spanish speakers and then... 5th grade, 67%.
Two possible answers. One, different groups of kids, different cohorts with different ability levels. And the second is inter-rater reliability of the teachers applying the SOLM. The SOLM is not it's an oral observation, you know, matrix that they watch the student over the course of the year. And every year we go through as a staff a little exercise to try and get everybody on the same page as much. It's subjective to a greater degree than any of the other assessments that we use.
Okay, and it jumps from 5th grade, 67%, massive jump. 6th grade, 86% were proficient, which to me, you know, you would expect that there would come a low point or just a medium point, and kids coast and all of a sudden make that massive jump. Overall, though, basically the report was excellent. And if possible, I would like to see if that could be done, could be easy, add it, and if the other board is interested in it in terms of how many come in at K and finish up the program, how many turn over in 1, 2, and 3, because that's, to me, is very significant when you have a turnover like that. And yet the kids still come out, do a super job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Valentine?
Real quick, and maybe it's a question, Jim. When we compare Pacheco's English learner performance or FAP performance or combination of the two to the district, is Pacheco's performance included in the district number as well as the Pacheco number?
Let me look at the graphs. I might be able to tell by the number of students in that. I don't think they are, but let me... You know, she's just listing the percentages there, so I can't give you an accurate answer to that. I don't think they are.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm pretty sure that they're not.
Okay, I'm trying to remember the order here. Mrs. Dickinson.
I read your report, and it's very interesting and colorful and exciting. A couple of these charts which show... what a startling advantage it is for English-speaking students to go to this school. That just totally stands out. And if you look at a chart like this, do you see where the red lines go so deep for the school on every single grade in English compared to, so they're proficient students. You know, the top go way, you know, it covers almost the whole percentage of the class. There's more in the school and more in the district, and the state is the least in every single grade, it seems to me, in language arts and in math. That's a pretty dramatic chart. It shows that cognitive benefit of learning a foreign language, a second language, I should say. Depends on who you are, what's foreign and what's not foreign, but a second language is so important. And I just wanted to say, if I were going to write something about why No Child Left Behind is a failed idea, I think just pointing to Pacheco would make a complete case. If that is considered a school that needs improvement, you know, it shows how ridiculous that premise is. Because Pacheco, having visited the school and looking at your report, is an outstanding school. And it's benefiting all students in just incredible ways. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that very much.
Mr. Millard.
I just had another question, Jim, and you kind of touched on one of them already, and that was, have there been any developments in the assessments? We're still using ITBS and Sabe, Apprenda. What do we know?
They constantly change. You know, we don't use the ITBS anymore. We now use the CAT-6. That's why the other data is in NCE, so you can take the different standardized tests and still, you know, look at progress over time. One of the more interesting things next year will be we're only giving the CAT-6, I believe, in third and seventh grade this year. So those cohort studies end right there. It's just like years ago when we changed from the 6-point rubric to the 4-point rubric in writing. We could track cohort progress to that point in time, and then it just has to stop because you can't extrapolate from one to the other. So.
And I've always been struck by, as you indicated, the subjective nature of that Solomon assessment. What's the staff in your sense of how you all are doing as far as being on the same page and making it a more objective standard vis-a-vis all the students?
Would we see a greater percentage of turnover in our Spanish-speaking students or a greater percentage of turnover of students in our English-speaking students?
Well, when I quoted those numbers before for this the sixth grade represent last year's sixth grade represented here, they were pretty equal. My guess is that, you know, every group would be a little bit different, and I couldn't summarize what would be greater. I mean, they're pretty close.
Okay. And the second thing that I think might be helpful for me in the question that keeps popping up when I read this is, since it seems like we're not really recharging the English-speaking students, once you're in first grade, you're in for life, but the Spanish-speaking students, there is a constant opportunity for new English learners to be coming into the program, which inflates or deflates your number, however you want to look at it,
right,
in terms
most
of
likely
your proficiencies.
Deflates.
It would be very interesting if Dr. Lindholm wanted to take this on next year to look at that and to look at the impact of new students on your EL scores
and perhaps look at the long-term EL or rates of English proficiency based on the amount of time in the programs. It would certainly help me understand it a little bit better, I think. And that's a very logical explanation. And then I just would like to close with telling you, I sat next to a parent of a Pacheco school student at the Teach Telethon Saturday morning, and this parent couldn't say better things about your programs. The pride that I hear from the parents of children in your program, it shines, and you all are to be congratulated for probably, I think what Dr. Lindholm says, is creating a model school for California.
Well, thank you very much. Again, it's a reflection of the hard work of the staff and the students. It's not easy to learn in two languages. It's a lot of tough work for everybody involved.
Jim, before you leave, I just would like to again, congratulate you and your staff. Adrian and I had a chance to visit the school site, and we were completely taken back at about what was happening on the site. And the thing that I want to leave with is the most impressive of all is to look at your proficient advanced levels, grade 6. We're sending young people into middle school where 95% of the entire 6th grade class is sitting at a proficient or advanced level on one of the most rigorous testing situations that any student has ever gone through in the history of California. So it's very, very high level of testing. And you should be very, very pleased with the results, Jim. Congratulations.
Again, thank you.
Mr. Miller, thank you very much. Okay, we have now item 5.
Oh, wait a minute. Well, we had a request to speak on item 4.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
I can tell that Jim Miller was standing at this microphone before I got up here.
Jump up there.
Bring this down to Dustin Hoffman level. Good evening. I'm Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School, and I would just like to add a measure of success to the Pacheco program from the point of view of our high school. We're very excited to have the first group of graduates from the Pacheco program who will be coming to San Luis Obispo High School next year. And from our point of view, knowing that they were coming, we wanted to get involved with those students as soon as possible. So last year, we began a collaboration with Laguna Middle School in preparation for arrival of the students at our high school. We attended the meetings of the parents involved with the program and the students and the staff at Laguna Middle School who were involved with the program in kind of charting a future for the students when they came to our school and also their continuing education at Laguna. This year, we started observations of the classes in the first semester at Laguna so that our staff would have an opportunity to see the skill level of the students who are coming our way. They were very impressed. This is our staff teaching Spanish in our foreign language department. They observed, were very impressed by what they saw in collaboration with Dr. Matakovich at the district office and with Steve Anderson and with the staff at both Laguna and our school. We put together an assessment to determine what the skill level of the students was in Spanish. And based on the kind of anecdotal information we had and other observations of the students, we devised a test that was about the level of Spanish 3 at our high school. Students currently in Spanish 3 who at our school are primarily juniors and seniors. The test consisted of a component in listening and reading comprehension, in writing, and in vocabulary and grammar. We administered that test to in excess of 40 students. About 3 weeks ago, a member of our staff, Senora Collins, went over to assist Senora Benitez, who's teaching the U.S. history class in Spanish at Laguna. We assessed the students, and we were quite pleased with the results. In fact, so pleased that we are recommending that all of the students who tested, who are coming to our program from Laguna, who had been at Pacheco, we're recommending that all of them enroll in our Spanish 4. Benitez will be sitting down with each student at Laguna, and he'll be going over the results of the assessment. He'll talk about each strand of the assessment and the number of questions, number of points possible, how each student did on each part of the assessment. And then a letter will go home to the parents. And believe me, the parents are already aware of this, and they're kind of eagerly awaiting the results. They've had good feedback so far. And then share the results with their parents, and the parents will have an opportunity to acknowledge they received those results, get them back. And we're in the enrollment process right now. so that it's all been done in a timely way so that, it won't be any questions about the placement of those students when they arrive next year.
Thank you, Mr. Unger.
I just wanted to ask, so does this mean you're going to have a Spanish 7 class in a couple of years?
No, but we will have a Spanish AP class, so that'll be the next logical step for these students.
That's pretty amazing. So you're talking about really 10th graders taking AP Spanish.
Correct.
And what happens after that? You just keep doing more and more?
We have to look at the local colleges, Cuesta, Cal Poly, for opportunities beyond that.
That's a wonderful thing.
Mrs. Botwin.
Will, if the students who take the tests, let's say, and they go into Spanish 4, I had a couple of questions from their parents. Do the kids get the credit then?
Yes.
For Spanish 1, 2, and 3?
Yeah, in essence, those students who are looking to attend a UC or a CSU or a private college down the road, they have met that. It's a recommendation for CSUs for 2 years and suggested that 3 years for in foreign language. So in essence, they will have met that requirement already. So they are really in kind of an enrichment situation in Spanish. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, item 5, projection.
Madam Chairman.
Dr. Brandt.
Yes, thank you. When Will shared this information a couple of days ago, we were all just taken back, as I know the board is right now. Having ninth graders come in Spanish 4 is a great compliment to the Pacheco and Laguna program. I think the exciting thing, though, Will, and he's not listening to me right now, but the exciting thing, Will, is as you build your master schedule for the AP next year, after they finish and pass their AP Spanish, if the numbers are there, maybe we can continue offering more Spanish to these students right on our site, because we certainly have the capable teachers if they have the numbers that are willing to go on to the next level, whatever level that might be. It might be writing textbooks. But congratulations to all that are involved in that program.
Okay. Item 5, projections for K-6 enrollment growth in Southern San Luis Obispo. Mr. Parker.
Good evening. And it looks like I, too, am at the Dustin Hoffman level. We wanted to start the discussion with the board and the community regarding the enrollment growth trends looking out 10-plus years and how that we see that affecting the schools in the southern end of San Luis Obispo. Our consultant has been updating our demographics report. This is, in fact, the third update. And it puts a great deal of work into discussions with all of the planning commissions within our district, looking at how previous predictions were accurate or where they were off in accuracy, looking at the latest growth trends and demographics, the latest birth rates, student progression ratios, housing transitions, as Cal Poly put student housing available, additional student housing available on campus that frees up rental stock in the city of San Luis Obispo, rental or sales stock, and those trends move families in. There are a number of new housing developments that we'll go to in greater depth as we continue with this presentation. Enrollment from existing housing changes over time. And we assume throughout this that our magnet schools remain consistent in their enrollment levels. So that all gets put into the blender, and he makes predictions as to what we can expect. Will those predictions be perfect? They will not be perfect. Can we rely on the trends? I think we can. And that's what we want to share with the board this evening, the trends that we see and the steps that we would propose to begin in order to deal with them. And I'm going to concentrate this report regarding the southern end of San Luis Obispo because, quite frankly, that's where all the growth is predicted in the K-6 range. And I apologize for the size of the screen. I was thinking that there might be something a little larger, but I'll put this up and... And you have this in your handout as well. Six new housing developments in the Hawthorne attendance area. In addition, there are a number of Cal Poly housing, student housing developments, which are likely to free up housing in the downtown area of San Luis Obispo, which is also in the Hawthorne attendance area. Now, what this means is that Hawthorne is predicted to see a rather significant increase in enrollment over the next 10 years. And allow me to put up the next graphic.
While you're doing that, Brad, may I just ask him a quick question?
Certainly.
The projects. Where are all these 10 projects? Are they already through the approval process? Where does that stand?
They're in various stages of approval. The planning department has a high level of confidence that they are going to come to fruition. And as we look at the demographics report, because these were identified as 3 years ago in the earliest report, you'll see that they may slide a year or two in time frames because of the approval process. But the city of San Luis Obispo is very motivated, as you know, to increase housing supplies, affordable and market rate. And they expect to meet their 1% growth projections per year in the coming years. And I've seen enough that I have a high level of confidence that it's likely to occur largely as predicted. It may stretch out a little bit, as I'll mention a little later. When we look at these trends, maybe it won't happen. Maybe it'll be stretched 2 years longer. Maybe it'll be stretched 4 years longer. Maybe it'll be only stretched 1 year longer. We don't really know. It's not an exact science. But the trends are there, and the growth impacts are going to be hitting. It's a question of whether they will live up to the predictions and whether they will come at the same time frame. What this shows rather fuzzily, and you have in your packet, is the projected enrollment growth at the four schools serving the southern area of San Luis Obispo. And as you can see, the Hawthorne trend line, which is the one that rises rather steeply, per predictions, Hawthorne would have enrollment of 784 students in the year 2014. Well, Hawthorne's is currently rather full, considering all the number of special use programs they have and the services they provide their students. So we're concerned that as in a few years, we're going to bump up against that upper limit at Hawthorne. You'll also note that Sinsheimer, which is the orange line, floats along just below 500. Until the Orchid area development comes online, then it starts to rise at the year 2012 and continues to 2014, and then it would run off the page as the Orchid area development comes online because it will only be about 30% built in the year 2014. So the trend line continues with growth in the southern area of San Luis Obispo. Interesting to note, though, that Smith and Los Ranchos are running rather consistently, in fact, with a slightly declining enrollment for Los Ranchos, below 400 students. And as the board recalls, those schools were built with the infrastructure for 650. Then 20-to-1 came along in grades K through 3, and the effective enrollment capacity of those campuses was reduced unless we somehow add classrooms or make more classrooms available for K-6 use, regular K-6 use. Let me put up a third graphic now, which depicts a slightly longer range view. And this, you may have seen before, something very similar to this. This is looking at the four schools that serve Southern San Luis Obispo and counting up the total number of seats available to house regular K-6 enrollment. And if, in a perfect world, if we could balance enrollment between the four schools perfectly, this would indicate, based upon the predictions, that we would run out of available seats around the year 2012. And again, if the housing developments don't come online as quickly as they are predicted, we have programmed in five special use rooms in an elementary school to provide support for the various functions that are not part of the regular K-6 teacher enrollment classrooms. But we also find that the needs of special needs students have increased. We have additional SDC classes. We have Title I classrooms dedicated. There are a number of useful purposes those rooms are put to. This is taking a snapshot in time, basically the way they're being used today, and saying these are the seats we have available. We're asking tonight for permission to go to the community and begin discussions about the predicted enrollment. And when we have those discussions, they're going to entertain a number of factors. Some of them are boundaries. Some of them are what size an elementary school maybe ought to be. Some other discussions would discuss safe walking routes to school, transportation issues, demographic considerations, Title I considerations, and even construction of a new elementary school, reopening a closed school could be discussed, adding classrooms to existing schools. Any number of things will be open for discussion because we don't quite know what our community wants to recommend back to the Board of Education as to how to best balance this enrollment. But staff believe that taking steps to begin to balance enrollment between the four elementary schools is going to be an important goal of the committee's recommendation. Now, we had suggestions that made a lot of sense, and in both the short term and in the long term, with respect to one particular attendance area or one particular spot in the district. This is the it's called the Edna Islay development, and it's the area that's hash marked right here. It is currently in the Sinsheimer attendance area. There are in the neighborhood of 100 students who live in that area and attend Sinsheimer currently. There are approximately K-6 students, that is. There are approximately 140 students who live in that area, K-6 students who live in that area total. The other students have transferred to other schools. We think that it would make a lot of sense to go out to the community and begin discussions about allowing that area to transition back to Los Ranchos over 7 years. And when we say that, we're not talking about moving any current residents who go to Sinsheimer, but rather new enrollees who don't have siblings already going to Sinsheimer, allow them to migrate back to Los Ranchos over time to keep Los Ranchos from continuing to decline in enrollment, to free up some room at Sinsheimer, which is bumping up against being overcrowded already.
Question.
And allow it a little room to grow with some of the new development that might be coming online.
Brad, a question about the map that you have up there.
Yes.
Did you see the one that we had in our board book?
Yes.
Okay. It was. I was going crazy trying to figure out where what was, and there were no landmarks to look at. And looking at the one that's up there now, I'm getting a much better idea of what you were trying to say here because I can figure out where it is. I thought this was the ocean out here, the real dark area.
I apologize that I didn't photocopy as well as we were.
Please do that in the future because it was awful. There was no. I couldn't figure out Cal Poly or. Well, anyway. Over there where the blue and the green run together. We're talking about that area of Arbors off Tank Road. Is that the area that you're talking about?
That's correct.
Okay. And that was the area that a couple of years ago we put over because when Ranchos got too crowded, we moved them over to Sinsheimer and then and back. Okay. I just wanted to clarify what that area was. Has the district sent out any notices or information? I had a call last night from one of the parents who has two young children in that area. Are they going to send out letters to these families?
Thank you for mentioning that. I had neglected to say I had in my notes. The principal of Los Ranchos, the principal of Sinsheimer, sent home a letter regarding the discussion that we were going to begin this evening in their regular bulletin. So those have gone out. The community has been notified. And we will be asking this evening to continue those discussions with the community before we come back to the board April 5th, I think it is, with a recommendation.
Will the notices go to the students from Arbus that are going to Sinsheimer so they can take those home too?
Yes.
Okay, and how about the ones that the particular couple that called me have a 5-year-old and a 6-year-old? Or no, whatever. They're going to have a kindergartner and next year and then another one. They don't have kids in the school. How will they get notification? Will it just be in the newspaper or what?
We've had discussions with both principals.
For them when they come to bring their kid in to register them for kindergarten. It might be a surprise. They may go over to Sinsheimer.
Right, and your concern mirrors discussions that we have had and trying to figure out how we're going to get the word out and how best to convey this message.
Okay, I have several people who want to speak. Mr. Evans, did you want to wait until Mr. Parker was done with his...
I don't think I want to speak. I'm just standing.
Oh, you're just standing. Okay. Okay, well... Gave the opportunity there. Dr. Valentine.
I was shaking you off, actually. The open enrollment process, beyond the initial launch of moving the Arbors new residents, not including Sinsheimer families today, back to Los Ranchos, after year one, the open enrollment process will be available to any parent to choose whatever school they want to go to.
Thank you. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I would support the proposal when you bring it back to start discussions on this right away. I think one of the most difficult things we had to do 2 or 3 years ago was when we had to look at the reboundaries in Los Osos, and that was done under pressure. The sooner we can get this discussion going among the community members, I think the better off everybody's going to be. And I was just looking at, I happened to save our January 27th, fifth school month, pupil-teacher ratios. And one of the things that surprises me is Los Ranchos down to 380. I remember just a few years ago when Los Ranchos was up to about 460, 470, right up around there. Second or third. Yeah, it was amazing. So I'd like to see that happen. The other thing I'm curious about in when we have this discussion and thinking about these things, what are the impact of the additional students going to be on our middle school and potentially San Luis Obispo High School as well, and are we going to be needing to look at that as well? Thank you.
And our enrollment, interesting, I'm not sure what it's called, the baby boom echo, I suppose, is running through our secondary schools, and the predictions for enrollment growth there show minor declines. So we're dealing with the district overall shows continued decline out to the year 2012, very slight decline, but concentrating of students in an area where we don't have enough seats. So it presents an interesting challenge.
Mr. Miller.
Thank you. I think I had a couple of those baby boom echoes myself. What's the best assessment of what's going to happen as these residential neighborhoods or rental properties are freed up? Are we going to see, do we have any guesses of whether these things are going to go on the market, whether we're going to see a different kind of family come in to rent? Because so far the rentals have not been generating a whole lot of students for us.
The student generation rate for the turnover of rental property, the estimated number of students per household is fairly low in the consultant's estimation, but if you move 500-plus students out of the community, that frees up 150 homes, and we will get students primarily in the center of town who will impact the Hawthorne area and potentially some in the Sinsheimer and some in the C.L. Smith as well.
And I think the fact that there's no parents here from these affected schools may be a testimony to the efficacy of the backpack method of communicating with parents. And we may need to be a little more aggressive when we really start getting into this issue. What kind of, just, and I know this is kind of an estimate for you, but what kind of lead time would we need to bring, say, Pacheco back online, terminate whatever leases over an appropriate period of time? And
if we were to head in that direction, which is a busing solution, probably, if we were to go in that direction, we've brought schools back up in just the summer months. As far as just getting them ready for school again. However, the lease term runs for another 4.75 years, I guess, about 4 3/4 years more. I think it's only been about a quarter of a year so far. And that is a 5-year lease on that site. Now, depending upon how economically viable that lease turns out for the master tenant, we might have the opportunity to negotiate. You never know.
Okay. Thank you.
Dr. Brand.
Yes, I want to thank Brad. That's a really excellent job, Brad, and very well done. I think the piece that I really liked what Brad just talked about, though, was the size of an elementary school. We really need to think as a board, what is the optimum size that we're going to live with? Obviously, we're not going to be able to allow schools to be in the low 300s and survive when others are at 600 or 700. But we are under-enrolled in our elementary schools at this time. So as we go through the process here,
school districts have been asked to open up their complaint procedures in order to include an expanded menu of things that could come under the complaint procedure, as well as expanding the administrative regulations regarding timelines and notifications within schools. What we're bringing forward today is a redrafting of the uniform complaint procedures, which expands those areas that complaints can be filed in to bring it in line with education code requirements that resulted from the Williams decision, and administrative regulations have been adjusted accordingly. This is brought forward for a first reading and would be brought back again as a consent item unless the board wishes to discuss it further.
Okay, thank you. Item 7, proposed revisions to board policy 4113, certificated personnel assignment. Mr. Robinette.
We have regulations set by the California Commission on Teacher Credentialing for the assignment of certificated personnel, but as you know, we also have another requirement under the federal No Child Left Behind Act that all of our teachers are assigned according to the No Child Left Behind Act requirements. So the California School Boards Association has recommended that we alter or revise our board policy to include a statement that we will assign teachers according to the NCLB standards. And this is for your review, and we would bring this back as an action consent item.
Thank you. Mr. Miller?
Mr. Robinette, does this change have any implications or any impact on the transfer policy?
No. This is only on the ability to assign teachers according to their qualifications.
Mrs. Botwin?
Rick, on the third paragraph there on page 7.2, it says the superintendent may assign holders of a credential other than an emergency permit with their consent to teach subjects outside their credential. Okay, how come we don't have in the second paragraph and the first paragraph with their consent also? First paragraph, teachers may be assigned to any school within the district in accordance with the collective bargaining agreement with their consent.
Actually, we have the ability administratively to assign teachers that hold a credential into any subject that they hold the credential in, with or without their consent. If we have an individual who has both an English and a social studies credential, we retain the right to assign them to an English class as long as they have that credential. That paragraph you're referring to is for people who are teaching outside of a credential authorization, an emergency permit. We would absolutely want to have their consent before we were to make that kind of assignment.
All right. So the second pair, the first and second paragraph, are those new paragraphs? Then are they changed?
No. The only revision to this board policy is the underlined section, which is the second to the bottom paragraph, which is adding the NCLB standards.
Okay. So these other two. Well, I'd like to have with their consent put into the first and second paragraph too. I think that would be the. Generally, is there anything to do with seniority or? For the placement? If a teacher's been at one school for 7 years or 5 years or something, you wouldn't just capriciously pick them up and put them someplace else that you need them, right?
Well, we don't hopefully we're not arbitrarily or capriciously doing anything with regards to assignment.
Oh, no. That's no fun. Go ahead.
But we do have the administrative right, as it stands right now, to take care of assignment according to credentialing.
Okay. Since we've never heard anything about it, I suppose everything's okay. Thank you.
Mr. Unger.
And I would just refer back to, I guess the second paragraph is the one Caroline's talking about. In the latter part of the sentence is in accordance with a collective bargaining agreement. And so that, I think, is the key to school assignments at this point in our management in our administrative regulations.
Okay, well, and Rick, I just had a question here. The very end of this amended board policy says the superintendent or designee shall periodically report to the board on any teacher misassignments. Could you clarify that for me?
If we were to misassign a teacher, it would be our obligation to come to the board and say, you know, we have a situation where we have no other way to fill this class and we need to assign somebody here that is not properly credentialed. We haven't had that situation occur. We have alternative authorizations that we bring on a almost a semester basis where we might have to assign somebody to teach under a supplement very difficult to find, and there is still a lot of work within the special education community, within the state, within various states petitioning the federal government to give some relief to the special education. The law is the way the law is right now, but we are hopeful that there will be some changes for that.
Okay, don't sit down. We move on then to item 8, which reads proposed revisions to board policy 4419.1, 4219.1, 4319.1, all personnel, civil, and legal rights.
This is actually one board policy, and the different numbers actually cover classified, certificated, and management employees. And the California Labor Code now requires that all employees have readily available access to the California Attorney General's whistleblower hotline, purpose for which is if there are any improper government activities happening at a site, that employees would have the ability to know and be able to contact directly the California Attorney General. We, in fact, have this in place and in all of the employment posters for the last 2 years that are in all of our work sites. This number is clearly posted according to the law, but the California School Boards Association has recommended that this become part of board policy so that it's clear that the board has adopted this labor code.
Thank you.
One question. Rick, one question there. In the second last paragraph, it says they will be displayed, prominently displayed in lettering larger than so on. Where are they going to be displayed?
They're displayed currently, and they're displayed on a what's called a California labor law poster that we put in all of the sites and all of the buildings. It contains the minimum wage, how to contact the Employment Development Department, and all the kinds of things about non-discrimination. So it's just part of a large list of employee rights and responsibilities and their legal rights.
Okay, item 9. Resolution number XX0405, positive certificate of adequate funding, second interim report for 2004-2005. Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Madam President. We are privileged to bring you three times during the year an analysis of our fiscal position. This is what they call the second interim report. It is a report of our financial condition as of January 31st, 2005. The second interim report is part of your board packet, and it will reflect all the changes in our financial condition since the adoption of the budget in June 2004 and the first interim financial report October 2004. In the interest of time, I'm going to hit a couple of highlights and then turn it open for questions if you have any about it. Let me just summarize the report by saying that it shows that we will be able to meet our financial obligations for this year and the next subsequent 2 years, that we are in fine financial condition, and we've been able to weather the storm, if you will, of our reduction in revenues over the last 3 years. I would direct your attention to page 9.6. 9.6 is the form that you've all become accustomed to looking at. It has the highlights of our financial condition on it. If you look in the column on the far right, 2004-2005 second interim, under the box that's for revenue, you will see that we are projecting a revenue of $56,267,000. It's actually a decline of $200,000 in our property. It includes a decline in our property tax revenues of $200,000 from our estimate on the first interim. When we got our tax bills from the assessor, the estimate was that it would be X number of dollars. Now that the tax bills have all been issued, all of the revenues are known for the secured personal and real properties, we're $200,000 below the estimate that we had at the first interim. So we had to reduce that by $200,000. The good news is we picked up $350,000 in other areas, so the net increase is a better. It's not a negative. It's a positive increase. The expenditures are $57,843,000. That is a deficit spending of $1.5 million. I can allay your fears by telling you that in every single year that I've ever done a budget, that by the end of the year, people don't spend their budget. Okay, they spend a real number, and that real number is always below the budgeted amount. In our last year, where we were really cognizant of our spending, we were able to spend below the budget by almost $6 million. I expect that this $1.6 million deficit will, by the end of the year, be a good million-dollar surplus. So that proposal to lock away money for funding that unfunded liability. Our employee settlements are reserved at $1.4 million. That's not 100% of the, because we just did some and we're going to do a couple more. So that's a substantial part of them, though, is $1.4 million. That's locked away. We have the tech sinking fund of $200,000. That's right below that. We have $147,000 still left of that. That'll be a carryover amount till next year, whatever that amount might be. And we do our lottery one year in reserve, and it's $971,000, leaving us also with an unappropriated reserve or a savings account with no specified purpose to it of almost $600,000. So we are in very good financial condition now, and the future looks bright, unless somebody in Sacramento pulls the plug on us, which we would have to be very aware of. I turn it over to you for questions.
Madam Chair.
Mrs. Botwin.
I congratulate you. Russell, this is the first time I've heard you talk about all this without saying, depending on the state situation and the budget, all bets are off. Oh. I'm so glad you didn't. This was positive. Thank you.
I forgot.
You.
Let me make
no,
a
no,
correction.
No, no, no. That's good. We're good.
May I ask a question?
Please.
So is the clearer picture now with employee settlements. We are still within our projected amounts that we've our placeholders, and we are not going to blow up anything based on those.
There is no surprises in our financial condition at this time.
Okay. And the unfunded liabilities, does this reflect the change in the accounting standards?
That's exactly what it's for. At some point in the future, depending on the size of our budget, we are going to have to report that in our final. I do actually believe it's next year. We're going to have to report that in our financials. And we need to be prepared for that. It doesn't have to all be funded by the time we have to report it. We'll be recognizing an unfunded liability, which is a bad thing. But considering that the law has changed, that it's $1 million, that we're making progress in whittling it down, I think we're in good shape for the future on that piece.
Thank you.
We'll bring this back with your permission as a consent item at the next board meeting.
I have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
On the technology sinking fund, we have managed to spend down roughly $53,000 of that. Okay. And in our discussion about technology, when we spoke about the switches and servers,
yes,
and we had anticipated the possibility of doing that work this summer.
Correct. This will be part of the budget for that. That'll be one element of the budget. Okay. There's other elements of it, but that's a significant portion of it.
So that 147 will be held in abeyance.
Exactly. We are reserving that for this project that's coming up this summer. This is a significant piece that we've put aside in order to fund.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Mrs. Dickinson.
I read all these numbers pretty much. This takes forever to look this over, especially when you're new to this. But on the federal revenue, the original budget is $2,661,000. Actual to date received is $594,000. So when does all that money come in? Later.
Why it comes in later is because when we do our budgets in June, we're very conservative in our budgeting approach. For the things we don't know or aren't sure about, we don't issue a budget. And we don't know about federal and state programs. The same thing holds true in the federal in the state programs also, but not to the same extent. But we don't do those until October seabeds, when we do a population count and the state and the feds are telling us how much per student we will receive. At that time, we turn the money over to the sites, their school site councils, and the various support groups for each site. We'll generate a budget. Then the budget goes into the budget. But until that point, it's not reflected in here, and that's why you see big jumps there.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, as you go through this next upcoming budget project, which starts very soon, there's going to be some enlightenment to those issues.
I would just like to point out that after 4-point-something years, it's still bewildering. So.
And I'll second that.
Okay.
Okay, moving on. Thank you very much. Item 10 is request to hire a reading recovery teacher leader. Dr. Valentine.
Thank you. As the board is aware, Reading Recovery is a support program for first grade students who are struggling in the area of reading. The Reading Recovery program has a long history within our district. At one point in time, a full FTE was provided to each of our elementary schools in order to provide this service to our students. With the budget cuts that are providing the kind of statistical and evaluative work that the program requires, both internally and to the National Reading Recovery Organization, we're facing a moment in time or a turning point in our reading recovery program, where we're anticipating the retirements of our teacher leaders, and we anticipate that those retirements will take place by the end of next year, the 2005-2006 school year. To replace a teacher leader necessary to run the program requires a couple of possible approaches. Number one is simply to recruit a teacher leader who is already trained in order to take over those responsibilities. The other is to train one's own teacher leader. Talking about the second alternative first, because it's a much more rigorous alternative, it involves a candidate to become a teacher leader to go to a university center for a full year of training and intensive work, not only with students but also under the mentorship of a teacher leader. It involves living expenses, training expenses, and so forth. The alternative to recruit, and during the course of that year, obviously the school district would not have access to the full services of the candidate, because the candidate would be away being trained. Another alternative, and we believe it's a more cost-effective one, is to recruit an already trained teacher leader to come in and take over the program. We believe that prudence in this particular process would ask that we start seeking the replacement of our teacher leader now, so that in the event that we're unable to recruit a teacher leader, that then we would have an option of another year to either train one of our own teachers or to spend another year seeking an already trained teacher leader. So what we're bringing to the board right now, just for discussion purposes, is a proposal to recruit a teacher leader for the 2005-2006 school year, during which time that teacher leader would be providing reading recovery services for half of the day and would also be providing leadership in the area of early literacy for the other half of the day and transitioning into the teacher leader role. And then the following year, that recruited teacher leader would take over the program himself or herself. We believe that by starting now, we're assuring ourselves that we are positioned to continue the program of reading recovery. Without a teacher leader, we would not be able to do that. Secondly, we're looking at a funding source that would fund the 1 year of transition out of one-time money, and then as the newly recruited teacher leader moves into the actual position, that teacher leader would be funded with the ongoing resources that fund the current teacher leaders. And with that, Wayne Brown is with us tonight to share information the board might seek, and we're prepared to answer any questions the board might have.
Have we exhausted the possibility of convincing one of the current teacher leaders who are approaching retirement to stick around for a while?
I can't speak for the teacher leader. Yes, we have discussed the possibility of that. However, the fact that we're coming to you tonight is a result of communications from the teacher leader.
Okay. Thank you.
Mrs. Botwin.
Looking at this, we've really arrived at a dilemma here. It's interesting. I remember years ago when we sent first two of our people off for a year to do the program, and we paid for the year they were gone for their substitute. We paid for their being there. Then they came back, and then, you know, started the program. And here we are back almost at the beginning again. Since we're looking at, if nothing jumps out of the woodwork here, Ed, we're looking at either $70,000 or $100,000. The cost of the teacher is estimated $70,000, or if we have to get one with pay the expenses and trainings, it's going to be an additional that's $90,000. So $70,000 and $90,000. While we're looking around doing that, could we also look at other options? What actually could we get? What kind of reading situation or group could we get to come in and pick up the slack here for $100,000? We have local reading groups in town and out of town, and I would like, we're looking here at a choice of one. The one is basically that we go for another reading recovery. If in fact that becomes an impossibility, then let's bring us back more choices. Okay, we can't.
Which is a decision we'd already made and sets up the requirement that we make this decision.
Based on what Walter just said, what benefits do we get by the attribute reading recovery program at this point in time?
Well, I think I could ask Wayne to come up and talk about what the program itself does, and if we value the results of the program, then...
Well, we know what the program does, but...
Those are the values.
Exact benefits do we get by having reading recovery as opposed to some other viable reading group?
I'm Wayne Brown, reading recovery teacher leader. I'm looking at the board and realizing we have a number of members that... have not been involved in the ongoing debate and discussion regarding reading recovery. And I want to borrow a little analogy that I've used before. It actually came from my son. When he was in high school, he's the kind of kid that needs to find a job where he's paid by the word. I mean, he's a verbal guy. And so one afternoon we were having a debate, my wife and I with him, and he's trying to convince us to do something. And he's given reason after reason after reason why we should do it. And in the midst of his explanation, I realized that having a reason was not the same as having a good reason. That was an insight for me as a parent. And I think there's an analogy here. There are many, many, many reading programs out there. And having a reading program is not the same as having reading recovery. I'll even say, we've been at it for 12 years. This is our 12th year of reading recovery, and we have well over 1,000 students who've been through it. Our results have been remarkably consistent year after year after year. Reading recovery, there are other good reading programs out there. But after 12 years, the fact remains, and that the challenge has been there for 12 years. We have yet to find another program that produces similar results with the same group of children. And that group of children is our lowest achieving and most needy first grade readers. So other programs, yes. Other programs to have the results that we have with that cohort of kids, we simply haven't found it yet. Someday we will. And I hope that our board in their wisdom will say, let's jump on that because our kids deserve it. But to this point, we've yet to find it. Can reading recovery continue without a teacher leader, or can we just sustain it ourselves without the affiliation with reading recovery? That's a good question that I think hasn't been stated, but it's been implied. The answer is a number of districts have tried to do that, mainly because of finances. It's just there are cheaper ways to run it. And without exception, each of those programs has rather quickly, over the course of, say, 3 to 5 years, withered and died. They simply have not been able to sustain the results without the support of the Reading Recovery Network, which is, in fact, an international network. So what we do is very, very difficult. We take our kids who have a history, the type of child who has a history of failure, not just as a first-grade reader and writer, but then failure in school and subsequent years. And we take those children, and the vast majority of them, 80% year after year after year, becomes an average or better reader and sustains those results. So I think we gain a lot from reading recovery that we've not been able to gain from anything else that we've looked at. Maybe a lengthy answer to the question.
Mrs. Dickinson.
The thing I was thinking at home looking at this is it looks like it's going to cost us $70,000 one way or another. And the difference is $30,000 to train someone from our own district. So I'm just thinking maybe, you know, there's someone in our district who would love to do this and get fresh training and, you know, renewed motivation from being there and coming back all excited, knows everybody already, knows the students. It occurred to me it might be worth $30,000 to train someone inside, just to think about that, because that's the difference. And, you know, over all the years, the next few years, it might be worth it. I don't know. Something to think about.
Dr. Valentine.
No debate to that point. The benefit, I suppose, of the $70,000 that would bring in an already trained teacher would be that for that year, we would also, for that $70,000, have the teacher in district and working, which we would not have under the other.
Mrs. Botwin.
Ron, you said a little bit earlier, you said the Reading Recovery Program has been here in existence over 12 years. How many students have...
We've do the math. We've, in our first few years, averaged 150 students per year, so that's 1,000 students right there. And then in subsequent 4 years, around 100, so approximately 1,400 children.
Over a 12-year period?
Yes. It's roughly 20% of our first-grade students.
And
percentage of the students, or an equal percentage, perhaps, as before.
Thank you. Chris?
Just a couple of things that I was curious about. First, we talk about recruiting a trained reading recovery leader, teacher leader. My first thought in reading this is, where are we going to find somebody? And how are we going to recruit somebody to this area to do that kind of technical job? Does that does that mean that this person is going to have to be enticed in some ways other than we typically entice teachers to get here? So that's a concern I have. Something else that I was thinking about, perhaps getting somebody from within the district, and I'm perhaps running this on a dual track, but I know we're facing declining enrollment in our elementary schools, and so declining enrollment could potentially mean fewer teaching slots, and so this might be a way of taking someone and being able to offer an opportunity to someone to stay in the district and to stay working for us in our age of declining enrollment.
That's an excellent thought. Okay, then. We'll move.
Do we need to give direction to staff to proceed there?
This is a discussion item.
Madam Chair, could I maybe jump in on this? I'm taking yes from that. The difficulty in recruiting is something that we're really looking at. It's one of the reasons that we want to start a year ahead of time, and it is problematic. We do have connections through Wayne Brown, Mr. Brown, with not only the state Reading Recovery Organization, but the National Reading Recovery Organization. And we're putting a lot of hope into being able to communicate and recruit through that organization. We would be bringing back to the board an action item to direct us to go and conduct that recruitment. And we're going to do it fairly soon. I may bring it back to you at the next meeting, in fact, so that we can get into the conventions and so forth for Reading Recovery to see what the landscape looks like for that process.
And if I might comment, our Reading Recovery program has been very successful, and it has a very good reputation with Reading Recovery nationally. There are Reading Recovery trained teacher leaders who have been orphaned by their districts. The district either was not able to sustain Reading Recovery, or their enrollment shrank, and they've went from, some districts have two or three teacher leaders, large urban districts, they've gone down to from two or three to one or two. And so there are teacher leaders out there who are trained and experienced and have been orphaned. Every year there's a national institute for Reading Recovery teachers, and every year there are vacancy announcements posted for various Reading Recovery sites, and there are teacher leaders that are out there kind of shopping. So we have several things going for us. One, a program with a very, very good reputation nationally. People know about us, and the reason they do is we published our research nationally, and it's actually very well known in Reading Recovery circles, so they know we do Reading Recovery well. Second, it's a very, very desirable area to live, not just for people from out of state, but Californians. There are a lot of people from the urban areas of California who would love to come here. The downside is it's very expensive to live here. And I think that could be the wrench in the whole thing. If you're moving from Ohio and selling your house there, it's difficult to move into this area. So despite the pluses for our recruiting, I think there's a very real minus, too. It's not going to be that easy to find someone. My sense in just looking around is we probably could find a teacher leader and land a good one.
That's good. I was worried we'd have to send out a press gang or something.
Yeah, we might have to do that. Go down to the docks and, yeah, you got it. Yeah, that's right.
Caroline?
I think here, from what I'm hearing, our first option would be that we would find a replacement the most economical way that we can. But I would like, along with that, I mean, if that is not right up, you say, you know, you can't come back with us with some people that are available or interested, I would also like to find some backup on other options, what are available for our kids, other programs that we can look at, and instead of waiting a year or whatever, that we at least have backup choices if we aren't successful in finding a Reading Recovery person.
I think that's a reasonable thought. If we're unsuccessful in this, we are going to have to look at something else.
Thank you. Item 11, proposed pay increase for substitute teachers.
You know, 9 years to get a raise for a professional person who has to have a degree and actually teach. So I thought 85 seemed really low. And I realize that we're comparing this to surrounding districts, but I want to say that, just as a little quick story, my class saw a video from National Labor Committee on workers in Bangladesh who were making clothes for Walmart, 17 cents an hour, and they thought if they could just double their pay to 34 cents an hour, they'd rise from misery to poverty and be able to provide one meal a day for their families, with forced overtime and all that. So my students, of course, wrote letters to the CEO of Walmart. We got a response, not from the CEO, but from someone else in the company. And one of the points they made was that, you know, we follow all the local minimum wage laws, which doesn't mean that it's just. So, you know, I think that it would be better for our district to kind of be a leader in providing a just wage in our area. And I still think 90 is not that much, so I would strongly like to go beyond 85 to 90 per day.
Okay, and I will support Mrs. Dickinson in an effort to move from $80 to $90 per day. Mrs. Botwin?
I was going to move that we... yeah, I was going to move that we... oh, this is recommendation, is discussion only. Okay, I'm not going to move. Bye.
Mr. Marinello.
Do we have any idea what the figures are on costs per $5 increment of increase?
That's right. Yes.
Per year to the district?
If we use last year's substitute usage for the full year, it's approximately $30,000. And this is out of general fund and also categorical funds because... actually, this year, the majority of our substitute usage is for professional development purposes, so that's paid for partially out of general fund, but also out of site funds.
So $30,000 cost to move to 85, $60,000 cost to move to 90.
That would be correct.
Thank you.
And there are some statutory benefit costs, so it might be slightly more than that, but close enough.
Rick, do you... do you have any idea of the rough proportions of that $60,000 that would come out of SIP funding, curriculum development funding, and general fund? Just is it roughly a third, a third, a third?
I wouldn't know roughly what the percentage is coming out of the funds because I'm not really sure how much of our professional development funds are SIP site categorical. I can tell you that with the addition of the secondary professional development program this year, we're running a little over 50% of our sub-usage for the year, about 6,000 days a year of sub-usage is in professional development. About 25% is illness, and the other amount is, you know, maternity leaves, unpaid leaves, jury duty, bereavement, and various other things. But of that roughly 50%, I could certainly get that information to you from either this year up to this point or last year, what the percentage of that would be out of categorical funds.
I would appreciate that information if you would, you know, at your convenience. But if we're looking at $60,000, it might be reasonable to assume that only $30,000 would be encroachment on the general fund. Possibly.
My guess would be more than that would be an encroachment on the general fund because some of the professional development dollars are general fund dollars.
Okay. Let's see how it comes back. Thanks. Mr. Miller.
Well, I'm not opposed to, you know, to paying the substitute teachers more money, but let's remember how this came to us. We took the initiative to recognize underpayment of our substitutes. We raised... the item that's been brought forward is to raise their hourly pay by $5, and I believe we had a little bit of a discussion about
their
this
daily
earlier.
Pay by
their
$5.
Daily pay, excuse me, daily pay by $5. So I guess, you know, somewhere as a public trustee, we push up against we're not having a problem recruiting substitutes, as I understand it, and we're not prior to taking the initiative to raise their pay, and. So at what point do we stop taking the initiative to increase pay for labor resource that we are sufficiently attracting? That's my input.
Mr. Unger. Mr. Unger, please.
Rick, following along on what Mrs. Roger was saying, one thing I am concerned about is how much of an increase would directly go back and be taken out of specific school site funds, and what kinds of reductions would that
of expenses, and break it out by categorical funds for either the option that we are recommending or the option that the board has suggested at $90. Would that be useful to the board as a format?
I think that sounds appropriate.
Yes, okay, that sounds very good.
Sounds inevitable.
That too. Okay, we move to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like anything to be pulled. Item 12, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item 13, approval to teach a class outside of credential authorization. Item 14, approval of contract for Edward T. Valentine as superintendent. 15, approval of contract for William Brand as interim assistant superintendent. Item 16, acceptance of donations. 17, disposition of surplus property. 18, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 19, approval of purchase orders. 20, approval of warrants and payroll. 21, ballot designation of Gene, is it Duggar?
Duggar.
Duggar to CSBA Region 9C Delegate Assembly.
I move approval of items 12 through 21.
Oh, second.
Moved by Mr. Unger, seconded by myself. Those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Mrs. Dickinson, item 21.
I do want to approve Jeannie Duggar for a delegate to the school boards. But I know Jeannie because I worked with one of her kids, and I know her really well, and she's going to be dynamite. So I just wanted to say hi, Jeannie, if you're watching. Good luck and have fun.
It's really hard around here, doesn't it?
Usually the person who pulls it moves to approve it.
Okay, I did that beginning. I looked at 35 and it says,
I move to approve item 21.
Second. Moved by Mrs. Dickinson, seconded by Mr. Millar. Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. So, reports by board members and administrators. Mr. Unger.
I just wanted to say that I went to the Monarch Grove Exploratorium, which was kind of a neat arts and crafts thing for Monarch Grove School, and a way for the community to get together at the school and have some parent volunteers come out and teach some new skills to kids. The place was packed. It was great. Congratulations to Monarch Grove. One of the things that our Morro Bay student representative failed to mention is that on March 10th, there will be an FFA barbecue at Morro Bay High School with a cow plop contest, for those of you who don't get enough watching the school board. For $10 a ticket, you can win $500, and so contact Morro Bay High School, and they'll turn you on to the barbecue or the contest. They need your support.
Thank you. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. I want to mention that I attended the Mid-State Cattle Livestock Show, and we were well represented by FFA from both Morro Bay and San Luis High. And I really enjoyed that. And then I just want to acknowledge that charming little ceremony that Mr. Marinello emceed for us a moment ago. Not only acknowledge Dr. Ballantyne's starting as our superintendent, but I just want to make sure we realize how fortunate we are that our previous interim superintendent, Dr. Brand, who, 4 months ago I didn't even know how to spell interim, much less what an interim superintendent was supposed to do for us. We made the decision to use one. It turned out to be a very intelligent decision. We got more than we bargained for with Bill Brand. He took the initiative on a number of issues, has made us a better district, and in just a brief few months has left his mark here, and we will continue to benefit from him, among other things, evaluation process that he helped us look at, Title IX in addition. And we are going to continue to use his services while we search for our replacement assistant superintendent for educational services, and his terrific background, for terrific skills, and we're very pleased that he's willing to continue and serve in this capacity. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, Mrs. Botwin.
In addition to that, Bill, I also wanted to give you special thanks for all the information you sent us in our packet last week. It takes hours to read it, but I really appreciate the fact that you get it there, and it's timely and it's detailed. The other is the special thanks I want to Patty Andreen out here in the orange, and to Watma do that, and this, to me, would, seems like it would help. Do I have any support from that? Anybody want to have the information of the study made available to us?
Not if it's this big.
I can
tell you that there are two versions of it. Actually, there are three versions of it. One is the press release, which you all got, and the second is a summary, which is about 17 to 20 pages, and the third piece is about 200 pages. But the 200, the summary is pretty interesting, and in fact, I would recommend to everybody that you go check out the RAND website, because it also has the same format of information on the study that they just conducted in California's education, which was in some ways a scathing indictment of the general condition of California schools. So it's worth looking at, and both of those things. It's the RAND Corporation.
Yeah.
And
I can give you the number here. It's www.rand.org/publications/M G 222. Did you get that?
Who were you giving that to, Mrs. Botwin?
I don't know. Giving it to the public, anybody watching it on TV that interested in pursuing that. I definitely would like to pursue that, to have us look over and see. It was an interesting article, and I thank you, Chris.
Dr. Valentine.
Yeah, Mr. Millar, you stole my thunder, at least in expressing gratitude to Dr. Brand. But I wanted to add just how much we have appreciated working with Dr. Brand in the period of time since Dr. Ladd left and up to the current moment, and how very, very pleased we are that Dr. Brand is going to continue with us, switching roles, I guess, at this point into the assistant superintendent chair. He brings a wealth of insight and experience and just plain old wisdom to the job that we all benefit from day to day, and I probably more than anybody. So I wanted to extend my thanks, too.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Marinello.
I was going to move.
Where were you moving?
We have to do the advanced agenda, don't we?
Anything for the advanced agenda? Okay, then move.
I apologize. I can move?
Yeah.
I moved.
Did you have something for the advanced agenda?
Yes, it said we didn't get the music proposal on here. Could we at some future time, I figure maybe jumping ahead a little bit, to review what Gary Lamprick, and I kept it if everybody else threw it away. I kept that proposal at home.
I was going to suggest that discussion might be part of one of the budget discussions that we're going
to
have.
That would be it. Yeah, that would be it. It also would make it a little bit shorter, and that would be very nice. Is there something wrong there? We've got the 205-206 budget. One is on 419 at Los Mozos Middle School, and the other is on 517 at Los Mozos Middle School. Why are they both at Los Mozos Middle School?
So that Marilyn and I don't have to drive so far.
Ah.
Andy can bike on over.
Do we know why it's listed twice?
Well, why we have two?
I don't know why they were
successive
scheduled.
Successive months.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, the question is, why do we have two meetings at Los Mozos Middle School in successive months?
Well, why do we have two meetings in the same budget topic?
Right, because we're trying to attract different audiences. That's why we go to these different school sites.
Oh, I remember now. Didn't we just put those in there because we knew we'd be dealing with the budget building cycle, and we wanted to make sure we didn't overbook another study session in the way? Is that what?
What's happened is that
that was a nice guess, though.
No, but it's not. It's close. But what we've done in the past is we've had two special study sessions on the budget, and in rearranging the special study sessions of the last 2 months, the consecutive periods took place. It's usually the practice to bring forth ideas from the budget project team, present them to the board for information purposes. You guys digest, come back at a second special study session, usually close to approval of the budget, having had your ideas from the budget project team, from the superintendent's recommendations, and then we have a second special where we solidify all of the ideas and then give staff direction to go forth and create a budget that we bring back to you for approval at a different time.
Well, could I recommend that perhaps one of those meetings be at Los Osos Middle School and the other at Laguna, something like that?
That's great.
Andy?
I second.
So we have Mr. Marinello has moved to adjourn.
I second.
Second by...
Everyone.
But...